Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another week here at the Damage Report. I'm John Arola, joined as always on Mondays by Francesca Fiorentini. Francesca, how's it going?
It's so good. Woo! Yay, me! I woke up.
You're here.
I woke up.
And on a Monday, so we haven't talked for a while since late last night on your show, the Bituation Room, which airs live every Sunday. What did we discuss on that amazing episode?
Oh yeah, well, let's see, what did we get into? We got into some Rogan Spotify stuff. We talked about how difficult it is to be a progressive in independent media. And we talked about Ukraine very briefly. And a lot of other good stuff. You guys have to check it out at my on my YouTube channel, Franny Fio. You can watch or you can listen on all podcast platforms, wherever, not Spotify maybe, but the Bituation Room is sold freely, which is an oxymoron, but it's sold freely on all podcast platforms.
I think that you are burying the lead. We talked about presidential pets and we really got into it. There were some harsh words thrown. There's a guest who I fear might not be invited on your show anymore because of one of the things he said.
Daniel's dead to me. He wants to kill the presidential cat.
Yeah, you gotta tease it, man. Okay, you don't just throw that stuff out for free.
All right.
That's the epic conclusion.
I said.
Anyway.
Freely sold. Okay,
There you go. And you freely sold out on that. But anyway, yes, it was a great episode. Everyone should definitely check it out. You know what is also going to be a great episode? Maybe this. I can't really make any promises. It hasn't happened yet. That's how time and causality works. But we're going to do our best because we got a lot to talk about. Not only like multiple crimes being either committed or you know, sort of admitted to in public. We've got that. We've got the latest development in what Spotify is going to allow and not allow. We've got some apologies that aren't really apologies. That's gonna be fun. And then a lot more besides. And especially, you're going to want to stick around for the end of the show because we got a massive consequential meanwhile in touching on war and past horrific crimes and COVID and space and a whole bunch of stuff. So it should be a lot of fun. And along the way, if you wouldn't mind hitting the like button and sharing the stream so the people know we're live, that would be great. All that said, Francesca, are you ready to talk about some news?
War, space, crimes, go.
Whoever has got their finger like on the B-roll button is ready to talk about some news because it is already popping up.
They're just like, yes, yes.
Okay, well, okay, fine. We'll get to it. Let's jump into this.
If these radical, vicious, racist prosecutors do anything wrong or illegal, I hope we are going to have in this country the biggest protest we have ever had in Washington, D.C., in New York, in Atlanta, and elsewhere, because our country and our elections are corrupt. They're corrupt.
That guy's kind of got a point at the end, but for all the wrong reasons. That was Donald Trump, who's doing his rallies again. And why not? He is effectively running for president. And let's keep it real with each other as we do on this channel. He's probably gonna be the next president. But anyway, there he's saying that if the ongoing multifaceted investigation into him and January 6th and the big lie and all the insurance fraud and all that, if they do anything wrong or illegal, they're going to once again flood city streets. And for some reason, it's going to be in DC, yes, but also, was that New York City and Atlanta? He specifically cited those additional cities for some reason. I don't know exactly why. He just doesn't want the prosecutors who he labeled as racist. Again, I don't know what that has to do with them investigating him, Francesca, but he's very worried about what they might do. And he is readying his yammering mob to once again take to the streets and likely do what they're known to have done.
I wish it were 60 years into the future. We've overthrown capitalism and we have installed, you know, democratic socialism. We've reigned in the military. Lots of things have changed in the world. And we can look back and sort of analyze the rhetoric coming out of Donald Trump in 2022 from a 1,000-foot distance, and we'd be safe and it'd be great because we defeated fascism. But no, we're here. And if I were to analyze his speech, saying the word racist is a very interesting like development in his neo-fascist sort of like Nazi light perspective. Mm-hmm. Because he's always saying what I think a lot of his supporters say, which is that white people are under attack, that they are being discriminated against by being made to read Toni Morrison, not even made to read, just have it available in the libraries that they never go to, by the way, but they're whatever. The fact that they're there is scary. So I think that is number one. Number two, he's doing it all over again, right? He's doing it all over again. I don't know what New York or Atlanta mean, but this means like, oh, he's learned nothing. Of course he's learned nothing. Mm-hmm. And he's inciting more violence. And I know we're gonna talk a little bit about platforming and deplatforming, but I sure as hell am glad that he's not on Twitter anymore to do exactly what he does in person.
Yeah, well, I think maybe I figured it out. I think he's calling them race. Is that just an attack against Letitia James? Is that all that's supposed to be? Is the Atlanta thing just because it's a city that's not predominantly white? Is that he? Did he just pluck a random non-predominantly? I think that's what it is. It's weird. It's stupid, but I'm pretty sure that's what it was. And I think it has to be weird and it has to be stupid to play with a crowd like that. And I'm sure he has learned. He's been trained by his crowds. That if he just says Atlanta, they probably go crazy, I would imagine. In any event, that's giving us an idea that, look, he warned us in, what was it, maybe September, October 2020, about his stand back and stand by for the Proud Boys. And then a couple of months later, the insurrection happened. The warning and the reaction to that didn't change his course. January 6th didn't change it. He is once again saying, no, I don't care. I'm going to send crowds. The only thing that's changed is I don't believe he promised falsely that he would be marching with them in DC or New York or Atlanta. He's not even making that claim anymore, but he is ready to unleash the mobs. And he's also ready to protect them, or at least make the claim that he will. In his big rally, Donald Trump addressed those who are still behind bars right now for what happened on January 6th. He had this to say.
People have been asking me about it. If I run and if I win, we will treat those people from January 6th fairly. We will treat them fairly. And if it requires pardons, we will give them pardons because they are being treated so unfairly. This hasn't happened to all of the other atrocities that took place recently. Nothing like this has happened. What that unselect committee is doing and what the people are doing that are running those prisons, it's a disgrace. It's a disgrace.
Okay, so I think that quote is one of the more consequential ones for a couple of different reasons. The first is that I would say three. So one, he seems to be admitting that those people are on his side. I mean, the fact that he's going to actually help them. Again, I thought it was Antifa. It's weird how that changes all the time. Two is that, look, they theoretically could still help with the investigation. They could flip, they could provide information. He's telling them, as he did when his inner ring of cronies is being investigated throughout with Manafort and with Stone and all that, don't flip. I'm going to come back into office and I'm going to pardon you, whether he actually will or not, because he could have done that conceivably before he left office. He chose not to. And he's also reassuring them that if you do stuff like this in the future, all it takes is Marjorie Greene making a big issue out of it, and I might come and save you too. So don't worry about the acts of violence and vandalism and all the anti-democratic violence, all that. Just do it, and I'll help you out. That's a great message, I think, to send to a country that's already is riven by a political partisanship and political violence as it is.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what is to come of the January 6th investigation, but I do know that there will be lawsuits. There will be lawsuits, and I know there are currently Capitol Police officers that have been filing lawsuits against Donald Trump himself. And so if you are embroiled in lawsuits over whether or not you incited a mob on January 6th, whether or not they were indeed your supporters, of course we all know that's exactly what he did. Mm-hmm. But he's obviously going to claim, or his lawyers will claim, that he did not. This doesn't bode well for them. Anyone who's trying to help Trump avoid any kind of accountability, him going back on the so-called campaign trail, you know, with 3Ks, like, and talking about how he will vindicate and he will absolve and he will pardon anyone involved with January 6th because they're being treated unfairly. Like, ooh, does not look good. If I were your lawyer, I'd be like, shh. Just stay at the Mar-a-Lago buffet. Look, it's got all the things you like. Gross eggs, more gross eggs, gross melon. You know what I mean?
I sort of know what you mean. I've been to hotels like that. Yeah, and look, I'm getting the sort of the temperature of our chat. And I think that they largely agree that, like, the issue with it isn't that, oh no, he is going to do this. I mean, maybe he will, but probably not. Like, he could have pardoned them already. He chose not to. It is like they're saying, you know, I'll pay for your lawyer's bill. It's not whether or not he's actually going to do it. It is just more and more encouragement to lawlessness. My yep. issue with someone like sort of breaking down the doors of the Capitol and then trying to bash in the skull of a Capitol guard isn't that they might go free fundamentally. It's that they did it in the first place, that they felt this is now a legitimate act in our political system. So, you know, sometimes you can register voters and sometimes you can vote and sometimes you can try to kill people mm-hmm. with a Trump flag. And he is expanding the bounds of what millions and millions of Americans consider to be normal, regardless of whether he means any of it. That is really my fear.
And to say nothing just briefly of, like, people like Tucker Carlson, who also don't give a rat's ass about the people who, like, went on January 6th to storm the Capitol, meaning he, like, lifted up some random dude and was like, hey, maybe that guy's FBI. Hey, let's put his picture all over my show. This guy's FBI. Guy comes out and is like, I'm not FBI. What are you talking about? Stop blaming. Like, I'm just a Trump supporter. Like, this, they don't care. They will yeah. use you as a foil. And mean, look at how Fox and Trump have treated COVID. You are a dirty rag to them.
Yeah.
They will use you for what they need you and they'll throw you out.
Well, yeah. And I think you might be alluding to this, but we talked about on the Bituation Room yesterday, the cop who resigned because of the COVID, the vaccine mandates, and he went viral as, like, a conservative thing for 8 minutes. And he just died from COVID. And I maybe there have been Tucker Carlson tweets about it. Maybe Jesse Waters is doing odes to him on Fox Nation, and maybe not. Maybe none of that is happening because they didn't actually care about him as a human. They don't care about how his family is now going to grieve the lost father, and his friends won't be able to spend any more time with him. He was useful when he was doing the thing they want publicly, and as soon as he suffered the natural consequences, they don't care. They're just moving on. And unfortunately, like, in this case with him encouraging, like, basically committing obstruction of justice in public, saying, don't cooperate with the feds, I'm going to pardon you, and encouraging more people to do it, you've got, like, a little bit of mealy mouth opposition, which I guess is more than we normally get coming from the right to what he's saying. It's not going to mean anything, but here's what that looks like. Take a look at Lindsey Graham.
I don't want to send any signal that it was okay to defile our Capitol. There are other groups with causes that may want to go down the violent path if these people get pardoned.
But isn't that a dangerous thing to say?
Kamala Harris. Yeah, well, I think it's inappropriate. I don't want to reinforce that defiling the Capitol was okay. Mm-hmm. I don't want to do anything that would make this more likely in the future.
He then goes on to both sides and implies that, like, Joe Biden is encouraging Antifa to destroy America or whatever. But, like, he pretended there, Francesca, that he cares about what Trump is saying. So is he going to turn against him fundamentally? Is he going to vote to convince? He's not going to do any of these things. It's so pointless. He's not going to do anything.
I just don't know what Republicans' end game is. Like, I really do want them, like, every single interview with someone like Lindsey Graham is, hey, what's your end game? Like, what kind of, like, how do you envision America? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And if it's we normalize political violence, we take away the vote for black and brown people and any immigrants, of course, you don't know where their loyalties lie. And I rule in a giant top hat like Mr. Peanut with, like, a little cane. Like, and I'm like, oh, okay, tight. Like, we understand, because you keep investing in this Trojan horse of fascism, which is Donald Trump. So do you, I guess you just like corporate run fascism. Like, or is that, mm-hmm. Can we just clarify so we can stop doing this dog and pony show?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, and look, again, briefly, I try not to go on about this every single day, but I generally do. This is, again, the we're not on a level battlefield in terms of like the left or the right, or I would even say like corporate fascists versus everyone else. We're not. We wake up and we look at how can we win on these issues? Whatever, climate change, reproductive rights, trans people not being demonized literally every second of every day, everywhere that you turn. Because the consequences, the stakes of not winning are significant. Status quo sucks. We need to change it. So we have to win, because if we don't, things are bad. They don't have to win on anything. They just have to run out the clock. They're fat and happy. They're rich. They're doing great right now. They just want to continue like that. And honestly, even if we won, they'd still be rich beyond our wildest imaginations. All of this is just a show. It's a carnival to distract their base, to stop their base from ever pushing for anything that could theoretically hurt them economically. That's all it is. It's not the same thing. Mm-hmm. Lindsey Graham doesn't have issues that are like just burning in his gut. We've got to win. He's not. He's rich. Everyone he knows is rich. Everyone he will talk to for the rest of his life is rich. He is living a life in succession, basically. That's what it is, which we'll be talking about later on today. In any event, by the way, even Graham, even for his little commentary there, is getting attacked by people like Marjorie Greene. I'm not reading the quotes. I'm not starting off this week that way. So anyway, we're gonna move. No, I'm not reading those quotes either. I put them there, but I'm not reading them. We're gonna move on to the next video. Let's jump into this.
It's time for the American people to declare independence from every last COVID mandate. We have to tell this band of hypocrites, tyrants, and racists that we're done with having them control our lives, mess with our children, and close our businesses. We're moving on from COVID. Whether they like it or not, we're moving on. We did a great job. Operation Warp Speed has been praised by everybody, but it's now time to move on. Remember, there are far more of us than there are of them. That's true. The Canadian.
Not in the official vote count. Just want to do that quick fact check there. Yes, we are moving on, Francesca, at long last, from all of those horrible restrictions that are totally all over the place. America is locked down and has been for a long time. We are taking it too seriously. Everyone is just taking it too seriously.
Francesca, I can't go to a restaurant right now or a movie theater. It's barred for everyone's safety. Every time someone gets sick from COVID, a Jack in the Box shuts down. The manager does not say, no, keep working, employee, just wear your mask and no one will know that you're sniffling and suffering under there. Yeah. That doesn't happen in America. In America, we take things seriously. Oh my God. And I just want one last thing with Trump. Or, you know, it's not the last thing, sadly, single tier. It's what is Operation Warp Speed? Could you explain to your loyal followers who are definitely not vaccinated what that operation was about? Because pretty sure it was all about ramping up the vaccine, fast tracking it, and putting all a bunch of money behind it, so that you could then trot it out. But ooh, you know that gets you booze, so you're not gonna do it. And it's so scary, right? How scary is it to know that Trump can't control his base? That like they've gotten too crazy for him? Yeah. That's the kind of stuff that keeps me up at night. That's why I need like just like all the NyQuil to even stay asleep. And CBD, like I need all the supplements.
Yeah, they have moved beyond the person who should have been like a parody of the craziest a politician could be. They're crazier than him. But yeah, you're right. Like he's like, we're not doing any of that. We got Operation Warp Speed. Everyone's like, whatever. What's Ron DeSantis up to? Briefly, I'll listen in a minute. I don't care. Yeah, there was not a lot of cheers for that, oddly enough, even though it's a great accomplishment and all that. And he was totally involved in it. And what he did for Operation Warp Speed, no other politician would have done. No other politician would have thought of funding vaccine development. It was only him. He thought of it. Nobody else would have. And they don't care. I love the quotes like that. Like, can we just accept almost 2 years in, the right won on the response to COVID, largely. They had control for the first year. They stopped basically anything serious from being done, any significant ramping up of the supply chain, availability of masks and tests. And then during that first year, they so successfully politicized every single molecule of this debate that by the time Biden got in, Biden could do the thing that was possible, the encouraging vaccination. But you already had a third of the country that would literally rather be choked out by Stone Cold Steve Austin than inject free life-saving medication in their arm. They won. There was a real lockdown in America for like 9 days, and it was 2 years ago. They won, and they have never forgiven us for it ever since. They've been so angry for 2 years about having won. You're free to die, and many of you have exercised that option. Why aren't you happier about this? Think about all your dead relatives that were happy to have died because they didn't want to take this seriously. Of course, we're joking. I wish that they had. I don't want a single one of them to die, but they got their way and they've just not been happy ever since.
You got pilots turning airplanes around for these people who will not, who still think that a mask is somehow totalitarianism. Mm-hmm. Which is my favorite story of the year thus far. A pilot just being like, I'm gonna turn this plane around.
500, oh my God, can you imagine if you had to take an extra flight? By the way, I did want to fact check one more thing, because if the last 5 or 6 years has proven anything, it is that fact checking Donald Trump to ensure that people have accurate information will save America. Anyway, he says that COVID's done, we're moving on, we're done with it. Not quite. Okay, let's take a look. Thankfully, the Omicron surge, the cases are going down to some extent. So if we could bring up this chart, you're gonna see that the it's dipping down, and it is thankfully plummeted to just 519,000 cases a day on average. Thankfully, only over 2,500 deaths a day. Basically as high as it has ever been in this pandemic. Ergo, therefore, ipso facto, we're done with the pandemic. We're only losing 2,500 a day needlessly. There's only 145,000 people in hospitals right now for COVID. I mean, that's not even worth mentioning.
Party of death. Team death.
Yes, and it's not enough. We're gonna hit 900,000 total coronavirus deaths officially by mid-February. Officially, there's a couple hundred thousand others that won't have been counted that were lost in the initial months of the pandemic. Let's just round it to 1 million. We're over with it, everybody. That's what I hear from people like Donald Trump, everyone on the right, and some people who were formerly on the left.
I never thought I would want to say the phrase "all lives matter." But I'm like this close to like taking a sign out and be like, all lives matter, guys. No, really.
How about this? Any lives matter? Is there literally a life that matters? Could you act like any
lives matter? Generally, anyway, maybe.
We regrettably have to go to one more thing to round out this time. Donald Trump technically doesn't have Twitter, but thanks to Liz Harrington, he effectively does. And generally, it's a bad thing, but sometimes good. If he is able to effectively tweet out, let's say, an admission of a coup attempt, then maybe it's good that we know that. And so recently he transmitted this message, this is just yesterday. If the Vice President, Mike Pence, thank you for the clarification, he's not gonna be talking about Kamala Harris there, had absolutely no right to change the presidential election results in the Senate despite fraud and many other irregularities, how come the Democrats and rhino Republicans like wacky Susan Collins are desperately trying to pass legislation that will not allow the Vice President to change the results of the election? Actually, what they are saying is that Mike Pence did have the right to change the outcome, and they are now on to take the right away. Unfortunately, he didn't exercise that power. He could have overturned the election. Again, fact check, he couldn't actually do that. But and I don't think a single person watching this needed any more clarification on what the plan was going to January 6th, either the insurrection or the political plan in the House and the Senate with Mike Pence. He's saying he wanted the election to have been overturned. He didn't like the results of it. He wanted it to be overturned. And that is not a thing that we in unison, all Americans can agree is a bad thing. That a politician actively tried to overrule the will of the people, didn't succeed, but might well have another chance in a couple of years.
This is just like the mob boss going like, they're like, hey boss, is the bounty still on Mike Pence? And he's like, yeah, it is. Yeah. And take that Susan Collins with, you know what I mean? It just, it's so chilling. She's wacky. Like they just, okay, so you saw that they were calling for his head and for him to be hanged the day of on January 6th. And you're like, yeah, more of that. Mm-hmm. I just, John, what if we all know, like no disrespect to TDR, what if we all stopped covering Trump? Like if we all agreement.
I think for the most part, it is possible. The issue is he is going to run for president again. He has a very good chance of winning. His base will be listening to him and changing their thoughts accordingly. Is it better for us to not know what they're planning, what they believe, what they're saying? Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. Yes.
Look, I honestly do go back and forth. I think about it, but I'm not sure. He is so tied into so many strains of conspiratorial thoughts that I'm just not sure. Look, I don't think we should cover an empty podium. I think there's definitely a lot of BS that isn't worth covering. But when he admits that he was trying to overthrow the government, I feel like we should acknowledge it. By the way, on Susan Collins, one quick note. You want to know a wacky thing that she did this weekend? Because she is wacky, like he says. She was asked if she could see herself after voting for him to be convicted in the last impeachment trial. Could she see herself supporting him in the future? And she said that she couldn't rule it out. She's so wacky. She's a wacky gal. She's still going to support him after his coup attempt. And for that, the same weekend, he attacked her. It's amazing. Anyway, okay, with that said, we are going to take our first break. When we come back, we're going to move on to some other, that's hilarious. Look at these producers. Anyway, we're going to move on to Spotify is actually changing course on COVID misinformation, sort of. And then we're going to touch base with the incredible rise in rent across the nation after this. Okay, let's get this over with.
These podcasts are very strange because they're just conversations. And oftentimes I have no idea what I'm going to talk about until I sit down and talk to people. And that's why some of my ideas are not that prepared or fleshed out, because I'm literally having them in real time. But I do my best, and they're just conversations. And I think that's also the appeal of the show. It's one of the things that makes it interesting.
Okay, so Joe Rogan released that vlog filmed from far too low of an angle, addressing the Spotify controversy. And we're going to touch on various elements of it. It was about 10 minutes long, which one of our producers, Marissa, watched its entirety. So apologies for that, Marissa. But I think, Francesca, it's safe to say that we're going to disagree with him on a lot. But before we do that, let's test out what he just said there. Okay. It's just a conversation. It's unscripted. I'm just having conversations, so I don't always know exactly what's going to be said or have my facts in order. I just want to have these conversations. That's the appeal. Is that fair?
I think it could be if he were a podcaster like me with only, you know, a few thousand downloads an episode. Everyone check out the Bituation Room. JK, this is not about me, but he has one of the biggest, if not the biggest podcast in the country. And so I'm sorry, but there is a responsibility to get your facts straight. There is a responsibility to do a little bit of research. God knows you can afford it. You don't even have to do it. You can get a team of people to help you write questions, right? And here's what I will say about Rogan. He is a perfect vessel for someone who is largely apolitical, who does not maybe understand all the ins and outs of issues, or like maybe doesn't know a trans person specifically, but will listen to Rogan talk and wax openly about it, and or have Gavin McInnes, Jordan Peterson, you know, a number of far right figures come onto the show as he open-mindedly, in air quotes, asks him, yeah, isn't it crazy that, like, you know, race is, you know, just like black people aren't like actually black. They're not like, you know, black like an obsidian rock, like da-da-da-da. And that is actually a vessel for some really, really malignant thinking. And because he's so open-ended about it and freewheeling about it, it's almost more insidious versus if he did his homework and research and had a little bit of pushback. And I would also argue with the premise that that everything's an open conversation, because we've seen him push back on people who fact check him live. He does that's not true. Like that.
Yeah, that's 100% true. And I have a lot of problems with what he said for a few different. First of all, there is the, I think there should be more responsibility, as you pointed out, when you have a larger audience. I understand if he doesn't like that. Well, you generate the audience. You want the money from that, so you should take the responsibility too. I think that should be on you. It also is like, we don't prep equally here for every topic. If we randomly had Emma on and we started debating The Last Jedi, I'm not gonna have a ton of elements prepared because the stakes are low. You choose what sorts of things you talk about in large part by choosing who you bring on. If you're just gonna talk about movie opinions and stuff like that, then I don't think people are gonna be too worried about your level of prep. But you want to talk about COVID and you want to talk about like the trans community. You choose to talk about things you don't seem to understand very well that are very consequential, that can not only harm the individual making the unfortunately often regrettable decision to consume the content. If it was just that, look, there's tons of shows that make the people who listen to them worse. But when it's COVID, they can kill other people. That's the big issue. And he doesn't really seem to understand that. Well, one other thing really fast too, and I think you sort of alluded to this in what you said, Francesca, about him not necessarily having the best grasp of a lot of this political stuff and everything. I get that. And I think it's accurate and it's very often said about him. At what point should we be able to stop saying that?
Yeah.
The guy's been doing the show for years and years and years. He's had on hundreds and hundreds of guests. Is there a single person outside of maybe Larry King that's been exposed to more information? At a certain point, are you just like either purposefully not absorbing it or just like biologically incapable of it? And by the way, some of it is by choice. If you choose to have Alex Jones on multiple times and Jordan Peterson on multiple times and Dave Rubin on multiple times, any one of those could have been a scientist. Any one of those could have been a trans activist. Any one of those could have been something that would actually expand your mind. And the show often sells itself as being willing to talk about anything and going in any direction, but frequently it seems to go in a right-wing direction. It is not nearly as broad and mind-opening as it bills itself as on a regular basis.
Yeah, exactly. What you said, how are you not absorbing? You have access to all the celebrities. You have access to politicians. You have access to so many people. People will go on your show and truly expand your mind, but you can't imagine it because you're too busy peddling in the idea that trans kids are somehow part of like parental child abuse. Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, real open-minded, bro. Real open-minded.
Yeah. Yeah, he chooses the people that he wants to have on. That's what. And by the way, none of this is, well, do you guys just want to cancel? No, I don't want him to be taken off of the air. I think if people want to push for that because they feel that he's harming communities, I think that they're perfectly free to be able to do that. The only thing where I get into anything that could even be in the neighborhood of censorship is when you are giving people medical advice you're not qualified to give that will result in them killing other people. I think that should be right out. And by the way, maybe I'm gonna get attacked from the opposite side by saying what I wish could be the response to this is, what the solution should be to all of this, whether it's transphobia, the anti-science stuff, or platforming right-wingers and neo-Nazis and conspiracy theorists, is I wish we had a society of people who cared whether the things they were told are true, that actually wanted to listen to open-minded people. I wish that all of the things that many Rogan listeners say is true about them and their relationship to the show was actually true. But we don't live in that world, and most people don't care about this. They say they want authenticity. They say they want to be exposed to new ideas. They say a lot of things, and a lot of it, unfortunately, isn't true. I wish we were better. If we were better, Joe Rogan would have an audience. It would be 10,000 people, and it'd be fine. He'd get to have the conversations he'd want. He wouldn't need the 100 million from Spotify because dude's been rich for decades at this point. I wish that that was the solution that we had. Anyway.
Break up big tech. I mean, and this is sort of the racket of like, you know, who can book big guests, and like, you know, Spotify gave Rogan 300 million when he didn't even need that money. Like he was great. He was fine before their money. They just wanted a piece of the action.
Yeah.
And so this is what we're talking about. And again, in our look, I take a little issue with this as an artist, and I know we're going to get into this, but as a comic, as someone who has their own podcast, the folks who always get the most opportunities for all those who are like affirmative actions, giving the wrong people, you know, put that aside. They're all the ones who are doing fine. It's always like, hey, does Chrissy Teigen need another new show on a new thing? Because I think she might, you know, or like it's always the people who are already famous and already wealthy and already totally cool who most brands want to like get on board. Because they want safe bets. They want, you know, they want stuff that's already going to make them money. So just broadly in entertainment, it sucks. Folks are not supporting new faces, new voices. They're not taking chances because corporations don't take chances. And that applies to entertainment as well.
Agreed. Well, we are rapidly running out of time. So we're going to take our second break. A little bit of what we prepared is going to make it on. We're going to return with the rent story. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. Okay, we are rapidly running out of time. We're gonna fit in as much as we can with this hour. Thank you everyone for being here. Let's do this. The rent is indeed too damn high, and apparently getting higher at a faster rate than should be acceptable virtually anywhere. And it turns out it really does matter where, although overall, US average monthly rent has gone up on average 14.1%. From a year earlier. You can see on this chart the change over time. It is getting worse fast. But again, it does matter. 14% overall is bad, but average rents rose to nearly $1,900 a month. In certain cities like Austin, New York, and Miami, they've gone up 40%. Jeez. Rents will apparently also continue to rise by at least 10% this year, according to the Federal Reserve Bank of New York. And we're gonna discuss this as we do. I wanna leave up this chart of some of the worst offenders for year over year increases. I mean, and look at the average, Nassau County, New York, $3,700 on average, it's gone up 35%. It was already expensive, now it's even more so. Francesca, people are literally being driven out of entire cities thanks to this.
No, I thought it was thanks to the Democratic governor's vaccine mandates and the high taxes. That's why people are going to Austin, like Joe Rogan. Good buddy, keep Austin weird and drive up the rent, bro, because it looks like that's what you and a lot of your followers have been doing. So I don't know. I'm just happy there's not a lot of California. California was always already insane in terms of rent, but. Look, this is what happens when the market runs everything, right? When the market calls the shots on housing and we don't see housing as a right, but a privilege, what's going to happen? You're gonna have a 14% overall rise in rents as we've seen during a pandemic, during when folks are still struggling, when people are still trying to make ends meet, when any support has been cut off, when eviction moratoriums have ended. Yeah. And unless we do something about this, and this is the thing that I say with government programs, I think it's, you know, all fine and good to help people, to put money in people's pockets, but it doesn't matter if we're still bleeding out thanks to big real estate. If big real estate keeps on squelching us, if we can't get rent control on a local, on a statewide level, hell, even on a federal level, then what is the point? We're throwing good money after bad, and yet we just leave real estate untouched. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's one of the areas that has been obviously screaming out for a long time for regulations. I mean, you know, there was obviously the mortgage crisis and its link to the economic collapse and all that. But there's just, and it's almost like climate change in that the approach that we need to deal with, it has to touch on so many different aspects of governance at various levels. But basically nothing has been done aside from there was the brief eviction and foreclosure moratorium, understandably so. And it falls off as the rates start to rise at their fastest rate. That's absolutely insane. Now, overall, to give you an idea of one of the elements of this, I want to give you these stats from the Washington Post. Homes were in short supply even before the pandemic, particularly for low and middle income families. In 2020, the market added just 65,000 entry level homes. They rate that as those less than 1400 square feet, compared with roughly 400,000 a year in the late 1970s. And so you have less new homes entering the market. As a partial consequence of that, the average mortgage of these even entry level homes is going up, which means home ownership is cut off, which drives more people into the rental market. And there's a finite supply of those as well, which drives those prices up. It's pricing out more and more people, not just from like hoity-toity neighborhoods or whatever, but from entire metropolitan areas. And if you want to take a look in that Washington Post piece, they do interview people from a variety of different jobs that are being forced to move, and not next door necessarily, some relocating around the country because of this. And I don't hear virtually anything being said nationally by the Democrats, and obviously nothing's going to be said by the Republicans about this.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And it's not like big cities like New York, I mean, under Bloomberg specifically, I mean, it was gloves off. It was just like build, condos. And yes, some of them were mixed income. Some of them, you know, were lottery systems if you were lucky. But a lot of them were just like, you know, rich entrepreneurs' third homes that they would rent out or Airbnb, mm-hmm. right? And that happens all the time in city after city. So of course, like I hate the idea that people think that we're not building enough. Oh, they're building. It's what are you doing with the units that are being built? Who are they being built for? Are they for foreign investors? Yes. Yeah. Or are they for families?
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And by the way, I saw something going viral. It was like an NFT person who was like, you know, the price of owning a home is too expensive. Don't bother it. That's why you got to jump on getting NFT homes and furnishings for your digital property.
No,
I don't necessarily know the answer any more than Joe Rogan does, but I'm pretty sure that it's not that. Anyway, with that said, let's jump into what is likely going to be the last story of the hour. I'm going to try to get to everything though. Don't worry about that, but let's jump into this. You might have heard last week, there's an individual, a 19-year-old named Jack Sweeney, who runs a Twitter account, who was approached with a very interesting offer from one Elon Musk, wanting him to shut it down. Well, he's apparently decided not to. We're gonna give you all the details. So he says he was offered $5,000 from the richest man in the history of men to shut down his Twitter account, which tracked his jet. He says he refused the offer because it wasn't enough to replace the satisfaction he gets from running the account. Which I respect both in general and the specific way that was expressed. Mwah. Just love it. I just really like having this Twitter account, buddy. Anyway, you can see the Twitter account here. It's at Elon Jet. I mean, don't follow it. That would really anger Elon Musk. We're just showing it to you so that you do not follow it. Mm-hmm. I don't want to drive it up to have more Twitter followers than me. That's the last thing I want. Anyway, it's one of 15 different accounts that the 19-year-old has set up, generally tracking the private plane movement of different incredibly rich tech related people. Musk's tracker was the most popular. You know what I love about this little, now just a week old article? It was listed as having 83,000 followers. Now it's at 223,000. So a bit of a Barbara Streisand effect happening there, buddy. But anyway, Elon says, look, maybe we can debate this. He says it's a security issue. I don't want people to know what city my plane is flying to for security reasons. Okay, we live in a country of crazies. That's true. Francesca, is that a legitimate fear you think he should have?
I don't know. Every flight I take can pretty much be tracked, is always being tracked. Usually, I don't fly on private jets. Yeah. So no, bro, you're the richest man on earth. I think we should know what you're up to. We're going to talk about Succession a little later on. I would like to know where the Murdoch's jets are flying. What deals are they making? Why are they around? And also, not only that, but it is just interesting generally to know and to see how much of like fossil fuels and carbon is being burned by the rich and powerful. I dig it. I love this guy.
Yeah, I think I don't like the normalization of violence, and this wouldn't really be political, but like I don't want crazies doing anything or whatever. I despise virtually every word that Elon Musk has said for his life. I don't want anything weird done or threats or anything like that. That said, it is in public information. And by the way, if he shut it down, it would be very easy for someone else to bring it back up. So it's a bit of a short-sighted thing, but I get it. He reached out to him. He apparently DM'd Sweeney and said, how about $5,000 for this account and generally helping make it harder for crazy people to track me? Sweeney responded, sounds doable, account and all my help. Any chance to up that to 50,000? He said, I've done a lot of work on this and 5K is not enough. He told that to reporters. He said, I have a lot of fun working on this. Here's the thing. I don't want to run the numbers, but I am willing to bet that you could not cut off a fraction of a penny to be an appropriate comparison to what $5,000 is for him to what that fraction of a penny would be for me. $5,000? He asked for $50,000. Musk has not responded. The dude has hundreds of billions of dollars. If he actually cared about this enough to DM a guy, you're gonna give him $5,000 and that's it?
Okay, both of these people do not know how to negotiate. Let me, master haggler. No, you ask for a mil. I'm sorry, 50,000, if not five. If we're working with fives, ask for 5 million. You have pleasure, my friend. Do not let Elon Musk take your pleasure. He's already gonna be owning our children and putting them to work on the spaceship. Mm-hmm. You know, right? He's gonna own us at one point. So you gotta own him a little bit. You gotta preempt this. Also, my guess is he spends about more than 5 million a year on security, right? You gotta have a bodyguard. You gotta have people helping, keeping you safe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 100%.
He spends that.
And I don't want him to have to. Let's be clear about that. I don't want anyone to do this sort of thing specifically to intimidate or whatever. He says he's doing it to demonstrate his tech prowess for his LinkedIn and stuff like that. And by the way, someone's saying, John, he doesn't have that actual money in the bank. I understand that. I want to be very clear. I know that he doesn't have it in the bank. You know what he does have? A lot of money in the bank. I bet he has that. The $5,000 just seems like so condescending.
He has 5 million in the bank. I'm sorry. He's got at least 5 million in the bank.
He has millions and millions and millions of dollars in the bank. Anyway, it's just like, and by the way, you offered $5,000 to him. Okay, well, back when you offered it, it had 83,000 Twitter followers. So what I've learned from cryptocurrency and NFTs is that the value of something has nothing to do with anything inherent or fundamental. It is just a correlation to a number. That's all it is. It's whatever the number is. Well, now he's got 3 times the Twitter followers. That's got to be worth at least 15,000. Maybe we could start the bidding there for closing it down. Anyway, it's an innovative idea on the part of the kid. And I like that he actually values his time appropriately and isn't so, you know, desperate that he'll just take whatever the billionaire is willing to throw at him. Anyway, with that said, that is going to be all the time we have for our first hour. We have just a sec. I'm gonna read a couple of your comments. Bernie the Kiwi Dragon sent in a super chat saying, morning Fran and John. On the subject of other things that Joe Rogan could talk about, I think we can all agree he should steer clear of finance for his own sake. Surefire way of getting sued, happier of the tiger. Yes, it's one of the more dangerous things to talk about in terms of lawsuits. And I think that most people should be very cautious about the financial advice that they give to other people. That's why I make clear that I don't know anything about it. And so I don't make any broad claims. But anyway.
And happy year of the tiger.
And happy year of the tiger as well. Thank you for that acknowledgement. Okay, we'll read more of your comments when we come back from our break. Because of course, for those of you watching on Twitch or on YouTube or on the members app, we've got a lot more content where that came from. We're gonna be talking about Ben Shapiro finally picking on someone his own size. We've got awful behavior already beginning to infest the metaverse. Before there was literally an interesting thing in the metaverse, there was an awful thing in the metaverse. And then we're gonna be closing out the show with news from around the world and meanwhile in. So we're gonna take a couple minute break. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back after this.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.